Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to a new episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long.
Welcome back, Long, after a week off. And how are you fellas doing? In the
peachy.
We are happy. We have made it. Well, fuck you, man. I had to work today. And for Monday, but I get paid for tomorrow at least.
That's good.
But, you know, we've made it halfway through 2020, and I don't know about you guys, but the first 6 months of 2020 feel like a whole year already. Here it is, July 3rd. We are halfway through the year, but doing okay, I guess. What about you guys?
Okay. They're going to send me out in the market again on Tuesday.
No.
Pull me out of the truck. Yeah. So, yeah, a little nervous about that. Other than that, things are okay, considering the circumstances. How about you, Matt?
Yeah, I got the started work again this past week. I've been on paternal leave for 3 weeks. Yeah, it went by so fast. I really wish they would have kept the original 6 weeks that we get, but, you know, I had to go back, I guess. And on the busiest weekend for us, one of the busiest weekends we have. But, you know, it was so far so good. I mean, nothing major, except for one of my best employees is in a federal detention center, and we have no idea why. It's just crazy. This year continues to be just weird for me.
Who hired him?
Mark Martinez. Yep, Mark Martinez.
See, so I would investigate him and say, why'd you hire this guy?
Yeah.
what are y'all into? What shenanigans do y'all have going?
Maybe ICE so can go fuck itself and stop being tyrannical. How's that? The Gestapo. Yeah. The fucking SS. But,
the SS.
Yeah. They're going to start putting people in gas chambers to fix the immigration problem. That's what they're going to want to do.
I'm just making a joke, and Law gets all fucking serious over here. I'm kind of throw it off.
I was waiting for him to say, denounce the patriarchy or something like that.
I'm scared now. I'm going to go into my show. I don't know why my voice is kind of fucking shot today, but who knows? And
probably were you singing Slayer songs in the car
all the time? Fucking
raining blood.
That's how I get my fucking anger out after work. I just get in the car and just do some heavy metal and just and practice my scream core singing. And actually, I like to do it in the shower naked, but y'all don't need to know that. But.
Jerks off his frustration.
Yeah.
That's a night before bed, okay? So that's after we record tonight. Oh, now people know what I'm going to go do.
TMI.
Hey, man. And we have started this show out fucking great.
Yes. This is the way to start a show.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm doing okay, too. I'm just, taking it day by day and seeing how things go. And they're talking about sending kids back to school amidst all this. And as a parent, you got to wonder, is it the right thing to do, what to do? But I really just kind of have to take it day by day, week by week, and see how things go. And hopefully people listen. And I don't want to talk about COVID a whole lot, but all I can say is mask up, motherfuckers. It's called being a human being.
Yeah, mask up.
Mask up.
Mask up.
Go watch your movie.
That's it. Just mask up. I mean, if Batman can wear a fucking mask to protect the ones he loves, so can everybody else. You know? And that's all I have to say about that. So, yeah. But we'll see. Hopefully it gets better before it gets worse. We'll see if people listen. As it's July 4th weekend, and hopefully people are safe about things and they party and they wear masks when they party. You know, and just pull it down a little bit so you can drink your beer and you're good. And eat your hamburgers and hot dogs and all that good shit. Because
I went to a restaurant for the first time in forever, like on Tuesday, because I had to learn how to do this new payroll system for work. And they're like, well, we can't meet at the office because they're like super strict about us being no less than 6 feet apart. And they're always checking in on you. And there's no way for all three of us to sit in one of the training rooms less than 6 feet apart. So let's go to a restaurant. And I was like, okay, cool. We went to Backyard Grill. And
here's my problem with that though. Okay, if you're gonna go eat, okay, I think right now, either take it home one or go to a place that's mostly self serve. Because I feel bad. I started thinking about this, and I feel bad if you're sitting there and that server is waiting on you, and you're sitting there with no mask on, waiting to be served, and they're wearing a mask serving you. And it's like,
I wear a mask.
I know, but some people don't. Some people don't. Yeah. And I feel bad for those people. So I don't think I could go anywhere right now where someone's waiting on me. It just doesn't feel right, you know? I mean, they can still make their money by, you know, picking up food. You know, not you specifically, Matt. I'm just saying people, that you're putting them in danger that's not necessary right now. You don't need to be waited on. And it was a work meeting, so it's a situation you're put into, but you don't need to be waited on, people. You can fucking take the food home. You don't have to, and that's a problem with people now. They're such a received society. Entitled. No one wants to get entitled, received society. Yeah, they don't want to give. They don't want to give. They want to be waited on. And you don't need that right now. You know, the sooner people do what they're supposed to do, the sooner things will be back to normal. And that's just straight up what it is, you know. Well, as normal can be. I don't think normal is ever going to be the same again. Definitely not until a vaccine is out, and the vaccine is out there enough where it causes a herd immunity for everyone. And so, you know, which could be ideally a year from now before that hits, you know, before things are kind of back to somewhat kind of normal. So we'll see. But in the meantime, though, we're going to keep on podcasting and trying to entertain people the best we can, talking about what we do after hours or midget hookers or anything else we can do to entertain people and make y'all laugh. And not so much a funny movie we're covering today, a little bit more serious movie, but we're still going to try to entertain you guys. So let's start the show officially with a download this, where we tell people what we watched, streamed, checked out, as we've all had a lot of extra free time in the isolation world of COVID-19. So long, you weren't here last week, man. So what have you been watching or doing lately?
Watching a bunch of anime because it's going into season finale mode right now.
Nice.
For the spring season. Nothing really stood out. Let's see. As far as movies, I'm such a history nerd. All I've done is just watch documentaries, you know. So nothing that's worth talking about, you know.
you're just
that took up my time.
Full of excitement, Long.
As far as video games, nothing. I was so tired this darn 2 weeks of working that I couldn't even play video games. I didn't feel like doing anything. So. Yeah, sorry, boss. I have nothing.
I got into some more of my Resident Evil 3. I started it, Michael, and I got to a certain point early on, and then I just didn't play it again. And then the baby came, and just really didn't play. And then finally got another chance to get farther, and now I'm in the sewers. And then I got to a point where I died from one of those mutant gator things, so I just stopped it. I was like, I've gotten far enough.
What were you playing?
But Resident Evil 3, the remake.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's probably the newest game that I own. I did download Red Dead 2, but I haven't played it.
I've kind of heard through the grapevine that the Resident Evil 3 remake feels a little rushed. Like, it's not as polished as the 1 and 2 remakes. You know?
Yeah. That's probably fair. Yeah. Maybe they rushed through a couple other parts. So far, I like the I like where it's going right now, but never know. Maybe the halfway through the second act or the third act, you know, it's not as good. But it's definitely different. Definitely different than the second one. I will say that. I also we been going through some more HBO Max stuff. The wife had not seen the Lord of the Rings trilogy yet, so we watched the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And now she keeps calling our baby's name is Sam, so she keeps calling him Samwise now. Mm-hmm. But watch Lord of the Rings.
But she had never seen those?
Saw that. She never saw it. Been Man, almost 20 doing? Years.
What have you been doing with that girl for 20 years? You're not culturing her.
Not culturing her. She finally got into Star Wars not too long ago, where she saw every Star Wars movie, but except for the anthology. She hasn't seen any of the anthology. And then I'll spring the... I know, right? I did explain to her why you watch four, five, and six first, and not one, two, and three.
Yeah.
But that, and then we watched Drop Dead Fred.
I'm sorry.
That's a trippy movie. I like that movie. It's like it's a good escape. You know, it's funny. It's awkwardly some awkward funniness, a little British comedy, but it's got what's her name? Phoebe Coates from Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Is it Coates?
I thought it was Coates.
I think it's Phoebe Cates, yeah.
Is it Cates or Coates?
I think it's pronounced Cates, yeah.
It's probably Cates.
There's an O in her name.
I don't know. Nobody ever remembers anything from her except... Nobody ever remembers anything from her except for the scene in Fast Times. That's the only thing anybody ever remembers anyway. Yeah.
I was introduced to her in Gremlins.
Oh, yeah, Gremlins.
Oh, that's right. She's
And Carrie Fisher's in it, too. And I was like, I didn't realize that at first, and then I'm like... That's Carrie Fisher. And she's like, really? I'm like, I'm going to look this up. And I'm like, hell yeah, that's Carrie Fisher. So our princess is in that film. Very small role, but she's in the film.
Yeah.
And I think that's about it. That's about it for me. Oh, no. I watched True Lies. That's the last thing I watched. True Lies.
Did you watch on DVD.
No, you can't find it on streaming. I tried to see if I could download it or use my DVD to scan into Movies Anywhere. And they got that thing locked down. I had to use my DVD. And you had I had 1995 graphics on that thing. My dad stayed in that hotel where Arnold jumps off the horse. He used to travel for business a lot. And he was so proud that he got to stay in that hotel whenever he traveled one time.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
How about you, Mark? How's Last of Us Part 2 treating you?
Oh, man, it's it continues to be... Man, I read a story. There's a guy that cut his disc in half because he was mad at one of the story choices made. I was like, wow, it's a game, you know? It's like you're taking it a little too seriously if you did that. But, man, I haven't played as much during the week, but I did play almost all day last Sunday. So I'm probably 16 hours into it. I think it's about a 30-hour game, so I'm about halfway. And it continues to be phenomenal around every turn. If I had one nitpick of it, it's a little more stealthy than the first one. A lot of sneaking up behind people and killing them, so it's not as much maybe heavy action scenes. But at the same time, I'm kind of okay with that because it serves the story well. But you definitely fight more humans in this than you do the first one. But they're still infected out there too. But it's just a great game. I'm excited to see where the story goes. There's a couple of interesting twists in it that haven't played out yet. There's some truly emotional moments in the game. there's a part where you you kill someone, and the ramifications of it just had your character shaking, even as a player had you shaking. You're like, wow, that's pretty intense. The developers definitely get inside your head with this game, you know, and it's definitely almost like a cinematic experience. And you know, HBO is apparently developing a television show, and at first I've always been kind of against the ideas of video games being turned into shows or movies, just honestly because they never come out well. But you know, HBO has a pretty good track record lately of things they are doing, and the more I get into Last of Us Part Two, I think it could make a very good television show with thought out storylines and not rushed into a 2-hour film. So we'll see. But a great game. Naughty Dog is one of the best studios out there. I mean, their Uncharted games are good, and they've hit it out of the park again with The Last of Us 2. And I'm looking forward to it. And there's a nice Easter egg, and as you guys know me, I'm a huge Pearl Jam fan, and Pearl Jam actually allowed them to use their song Future Days from their 2013 album in the game. So there's some Pearl Jam nods in the game, which is kind of a cool Easter egg as being a fan of the game and a fan of that band. A little extra bonus for me there. So I thought that was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. There's like a poster on the wall. And then, of course, they use the song in the game. It's kind of a theme for the game. So that's kind of neat. Other than that, I've been trying to I texted y'all saying Cowboy Bebop was on sale on Vudu. So I've gotten back into watching that. I just started over again because I was probably on like episode 13 mm-hmm. on my Blu-rays. And I just decided to start over and kind of watching that again. I guess they're fixing to kick up production of the TV show again. They're going to start filming without... I guess they're going to start filming scenes they can film without John Chow until he's completely healed. So that's kind of cool. And then I watched Man of Steel the other day because I've been on the Superman kick lately. And I really like Man of Steel a lot. It kind of disappoints me that Warner Brothers could not have played off that film a little bit more than they did. Because I think it's a pretty solid film, except... the Jonathan Kent death scene's always going to bother me. I hate the way they did that, you know, because the whole idea of Jonathan Kent dying is that Clark was helpless. He couldn't help his father. And the fact that he just lets him die in a tornado is ridiculous because Clark would not have done that. Mm-hmm. He would have saved his dad. And so that part bothers
me. Superman wouldn't let that happen.
No. And that's the, I like every 98% of Man of Steel, except for that one scene. It just really bothers me, and I'm never going to like that. And I wish they would have done that a little differently. But, you know, I guess it's a story choice they made. And that's really about all I've really watched this week, just Man of Steel and Cowboy Bebop mostly, and really into The Last of Us. I'm hoping Sunday I can spend most of the day playing the more of The Last of Us, since tomorrow's holiday, and play more of it after I get the episode edited and uploaded, of course, and then I'll sit down and play the game. So yeah, but a good week overall. So let's get into today's feature film, as it is a July 4th weekend in America, and you know, we decided, which is of course our Independence Day, so we decided to feature a film that is an important part of the history of the world and things that have occurred, and obviously a lot of talk about right now in the world with the protesting and current moves going on about it's brought back some things from the Civil War era into the people's minds nowadays. But you know, this movie though is not necessarily a movie to remind us of the choices that were made back then. The bad choices were made. It's more of a celebration of the men that fought in the Civil War. That's how I felt watching the movie Glory, which is of course the movie we're doing today, from a 1989. Along, this was your pick, man, so I'm going to let you summarize it.
Basically, it is a movie, as you said, set during the Civil War, and it's about the 54th Massachusetts Volunteer Colored Regiment, and it's really about how they are gathered and trained, led by Matthew Broderick and Cary Elwes, and star-studded cast members. Top billing, of course, is Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman, Audrey Bauer. I'm sure there's another couple of names in there I've forgotten. They're important. But, it just follows the story of the 54th Regiment and their time during the Civil War.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. You know, first off, it'd been a long time since I had seen this movie, and I forgot. And obviously, when we do our shows, these movies have been out for 30 years. Spoilers are obvious. I forgot they all die at the end, so thanks for that, Long. I was like, motherfucker, they all die at the end.
That's okay, because I do have some historical stories to tell you what happened afterwards. So we'll talk about the movie itself.
Rewatching this movie, it'd been a long time since I've seen it. I felt that as I'm watching this movie, I was like, my first thought was like, I didn't realize Edward Zwick directed it, who did The Last Samurai, because there's a lot of similarities in Legend of the Fall. Like he shoots a lot of scenes very similar in all of his movies. Just the way he shoots things, and the movie's a little bit over dramatic. But I guess it's also 1989. Things were, filmmaking styles were a little different than they are now. It uses a sweeping score a lot to build up the dramatic scenes. I think overall the cast in this film is really good, except for Matthew Broderick. He just really falls pretty flat for me in this movie.
Yeah.
His accent's bad. He looks like he's reading his lines a lot. And maybe that's a product of being around a lot of other really good actors, maybe. But he just, like, I just felt like he was miscast in this. And he doesn't do a terrible job, but he's not great either. And all I'm seeing when I'm watching this is Ferris Bueller the whole time. And maybe that's a little unfair to him, but I just feel like he could have been better.
At the time, he was an up-and-coming actor. And so, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head. I mean, he's surrounded by all this talent. You've got Denzel and Morgan Freeman, and then Cary Elwes, which, you know, success from Princess Bride at this point. And then, you know, he went on to have a very successful career, unlike Broderick. You know, Broderick, it's like, this is, and I looked at his cinematography, or his casted filmography. Thanks, Ron. And this is like listed as his number three film right after Ferris Bueller's Day Off and War Games. And, you know, for this to be your number three film, it just, it just speaks to kind of how he really didn't rise above Ferris Bueller.
Matthew Broderick was pretty good in that movie with Marlon Brando. What was it? Remember? It was
comedy. Is that the Freshman?
Yeah.
The Freshman.
Yeah, okay, that one was good. Yeah. I did like that one.
The Freshman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And hey, don't forget, he was in Godzilla.
was in a Godzilla film.
Yeah, and I'll give Broderick credit. Like, I do think that he did a good enough job in this to be believable, that he did care about the men and their training. And of course, the movie deals with their hardships of being of racism and being mistreated as they go to war. I mean, there's a very evil, I wouldn't say evil, but yeah, he's kind of evil, the general admiral that kept delaying them seeing any combat, kept giving them just work missions and side jobs, and they denied them new shoes and clothing and things like that they needed. Broderick did a good job in presenting himself as an actor to show that he did care about these men and fight for them. But even when he got angry, like at the general, his acting just kind of sounded like, I don't know if I'd believe that he was going to kick my ass. You know, the general sitting there looking scared. And it's just like, I don't know, you're not very tough, Matthew Broderick. But he does a good job. He does a good enough job in the movie.
It was very much, sir, I will write the letter to your superiors.
And I think that's the hardest thing is the accent. The accent he has is so off-putting. But the rest of the cast, like Denzel Washington, Morgan Freeman, and all the actors in the regiment are really, really good. You know, I think they do a good job in the film. Of course, Denzel won Best Supporting Actor for this, his first Oscar. And, of course, Morgan Freeman, I mean, when is that guy not great in any movie that he's in? Dreamcatcher. That was a pretty bad film, but they do a really good job of showing a brotherhood to each other and support each other. I thought the scene where they decided not to take any money was pretty powerful. That was a really well done scene.
Yeah,
and I wonder how historically.
Have you seen this movie before?
Huh?
Have you seen this movie before, Matt?
This was my first time seeing this film.
Oh, okay. Yeah. When did you see it?
I watched it Monday.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then yeah. I felt like I got distracted in the last half, so I watched the last half again. I think Tuesday. So I was trying to watch it while the kids were running around. So I caught the first half pretty good. And then about the time when they start, you know, training the regiment, kind of had to chase the kids around. So I had to rewatch the second half. And it was funny. I told Mark, I was like, man, this reminds me of Last Samurai with Matthew Broderick shooting the gun next to that the guy that, you know, is really good at shooting. And,
was there a thing like that in Last Samurai?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. He actually shoots at him at his feet.
You ever seen Last Samurai? No?
Hell no.
Dude, Tom Cruise is so good in that film.
It's actually a really good movie.
Man, if you took Tom Cruise and if you put that performance that Tom Cruise had and you put it over here in this movie, this would be like one of the best war films ever made. I think
Tom Cruise would have been a better cast person.
Absolutely.
In this role, for sure.
Yeah. Well, that's what Matt was saying. But...
Yeah, I was supporting Matt's point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah. But, you should one day give Last Samurai a chance. When I saw Last Samurai, I had no expectations in it. I actually saw it in theaters, and I walked out going, surprisingly, like, wow, this was actually really well done. And I remember Tom Cruise took a lot of flack for taking on that role, but it was surprisingly like a really, really well done film.
Why? Because he was playing a white savior for the Japanese people.
But
he's the last samurai.
No, he's not. I know. Yeah, isn't he?
He plays like a more like a witness, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's more like a witness.
He's a witness.
He trains with the last samurai, but he's not really the last one.
Yeah,
if I remember right. Yeah, because Ken Watanabe's character is actually like the last samurai, right? Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
I need to rewatch that one day. But back to Glory.
They're battle tech. Yeah.
One thing about Glory is it also won the Oscar for best cinematography, and I did feel as I was watching it, like the movie looked really good. Matt purchased the movie on Amazon Prime, so I watched it on his Amazon Prime. It's one of those movies that. The 4K transfer is a little distracting. You know, sometimes you watch the older movies from the 80s and they transfer to 4K. You get a lot of that high-speed movement, and then where it almost looks fake. So there were times during the battle scenes where the 4K transfer was a little distracting, but that's just the price of 4K transfers from older films.
Well, do you have your TV on fast movement mode? You know,
yeah, I have the HDR turn. Yeah. Yeah, I have the HDR.
Well, there's that feature that on some TVs that does that, make the motion more blurry or more unnatural looking. So, right. I don't know. Maybe just the TV doing that. Yeah.
But that is one thing. No, go ahead. Go ahead, Long.
Oh, no. I was just asking you what scene stuck out with you guys. Didn't have to be in any order.
I would say the ending's probably the most prominent scene, I think. Because I think it took me by surprise, being the first time I've seen it. I knew a lot of people were dying, and I'm like, man, they're running up a hill. This is bad. You know, they're at a disadvantage. And I thought Matthew Broderick falling and his regiment kind of like, you know, being invigorated by that and running up the hill was going to be this big hoorah where they just took the hill because of this emotional, you know, frustration that they had seeing their leader die. And then they were met with cannon fire and just threw me off guard. I'm like, how the hell do they die? Why do they have to die? So I was hoping that they just, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. That's a good point, because the movie is built on the idea of hope, you know, by using these color regimen to go into war and to fight against the North, and you know, they fight all their hardships and everything they go through to finally get to battle, and like you said, they finally reach that battle, and then it's like, that's it, they are all killed, and it And that hope is just taken away from you in that moment when Matthew Broderick's character dies, and then they all follow suit and die too. And you're like, well, that kind of sucks. You know? And so it was a little disappointing. The ending's a bit hard to watch, a little bit disappointing, but I think that's a really good point, because you go through this journey with these characters, and then you're like, that's not the ending you were expecting at all. You know? But Long, you said you had some historical facts as to what happened, you know, with the film and what happened.
I'll get to that, but I want to share a couple of my favorite scenes in the movie. Some of my favorite scenes in the movie is the scene where Morgan Freeman steps up to Denzel Washington and talks to him about his anger, you know?
Yeah.
And then, really, Morgan Freeman's character is my favorite character in this whole thing, you know?
Well, he's kind of the glue that holds the regimen together, you know?
Yeah.
And it keeps them from fighting amongst each other and reminds them why they're there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of my favorite scenes. And, all the letters that the narration Matthew Broderick's character does, they're all actual letters by Robert Gould Shaw.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting. Kind of, it's like people wrote really good letters back then, huh?
Yeah.
Compared to now. No emojis either.
No emojis. Poop emojis. Yeah.
Yeah. People had a way with words back then. I'll go to some little bit of historical facts. The movie gives off the impression that the 54th Massachusetts was made of escaped slaves, where it's actually most of the regiment was actually made up of volunteered freemen, free black citizens who were, you know, who weren't runaway slaves. They basically gave up their lives in the North. Some of these guys are successful businessmen as well, and some of the troops, two of them were sons of Frederick Douglass, who actually was in the regiment.
Oh wow!
During the fight, the one of the things I didn't like about the ending was like the coda at the end saying that Fort Wagner was never taken. You know. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like, oh, well, thanks for letting us know. And what happened after the battle, actually, the 54th Regiment, not all of them died. It's just really like 30 to 40% of them lost their battle strength. You know, so like out of 1,000, probably 200 to 350 lost their lives or couldn't fight anymore. Mm-hmm. So the rest of them were turned away. But they did. It was the only regiment to reach the furthest out of all the other regiments that attacked Fort Wagner. Fort Wagner itself was given up by the Confederates 2 months later because the Confederates knew that they couldn't stay out that far and keep defending against the Union soldiers.
Okay.
But that scene where everyone was buried, the 54th Regiment did ended up camping out in Fort Wagner, and then repaired the base, and they were looking for where all the comrades were buried and stuff like that too. Mm. So they're still there. The remains of some of the soldiers, I believe, are still at the beaches of the fort. Yeah, and then the regiment also participated in a battle called the Battle of Ule or something. And they had to help the Union soldiers retreat. And they were the only people to hold the line to give the Union soldiers to escape the battlefield. And they were successful in helping the Union troops retreat. And then they were ordered to pull a heavy train 10 miles by rope.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, dang. You know,
thanks for saving our ass. Now pull this train.
Yeah, yeah. But the train had wounded soldiers on it. Oh,
okay.
So, I mean, they did it because they had to, and it wasn't like a bitch job or something, because, you know, they had to help the wounded on the train. But they hauled it for 10 miles. Took them 2 days straight, 48 hours straight, to get it to the nearest field hospital. Man, but the 54th Regiment were heroes.
Say, those guys are pretty badass. They're pulling a train.
Yeah.
And I kind of figured that the movie, that some more of them had to have survived, because the movie focused on, you know, the main leaders and men of the regiment. But in the beginning of the movie, when they showed them all volunteering, there were hundreds of them that had registered and be part of the regiment. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The 54th Regiment, in real life, there was actually three regiments that were created, the 54th and the 55th. And then the third regiment that was all cavalry, all black cavalry horse riders. So so it was a pretty significant, about 3,000 soldiers. Due to the valor of their battle at Fort Wagner, it helped inspire to recruit 180,000 more black volunteers.
Yeah, I did read that a lot of people signed up because of their bravery. Yeah.
Yeah, and that basically helped because by that time, you know, in the North, people did not want to keep fighting this war. It was becoming more and more unpopular. And so with black soldiers coming in to help shore up the numbers, that did help, you know, with the pressure, relieving the pressure and stuff.
Right.
So, it was pretty cool. The 54th Regiment also is credited with having the first black Medal of Honor recipient as well. The soldier, I forget his name, and I apologize. The soldier, the original color bearer, the flag bearer, was shot, and this soldier picked up the flag bearer, the flag, and hoisted it onto the sand dune and planted it. And while he was being shot at, lost an arm too. While trying to keep the flag standing. So he posthumously won the Congressional Medal of Honor. So, there's some really good uplifting stories that came from it. So,
Course, you know, Denzel won Supporting Actor for this, and in the scene where he is whipped, he actually they actually filmed that using a whip that would not leave, you know, would not tear his skin, and everything, but it still hurt, and like so his tear he sheds is actually kind of real. And because it was starting to get a little painful at that point. And the director, Edward Zwick, wanted to say cut. And Denzel even said, no, keep going a few minutes longer. And talk about putting yourself into the role. Put himself into the role. He wanted to be as real as possible so that people realize what, you know, they went through and for their freedom, you know, and such. And like you said, a lot of these guys were freemen already. But they were fighting for the freedoms of other, you know, colored people and things like that during the Civil War.
Yeah.
And but definitely heroes for sure. You know, I think that's the best way to put that. At the end of the day, you know, a lot of them might have been killed in combat, but ultimately they were all heroes because it led to changes in the world at that time for sure. You know.
Yeah. And a little side note, remember that scene when they were protesting against unequal pay? The 18 months later after that event, a lot of the soldiers did get the $13 pay plus back pay old.
Oh, that's cool.
So,
nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of money back then.
Money. Yeah.
Sure.
So $13 an hour. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder how much is that in inflation?
Quite a bit, I'm sure.
Calculator. It only goes back to 1913.
Dang it. Darn. So how do you so what do you guys rate this movie?
Oh, I give it an A. Easy.
Matt, are you awake?
Man, I feel like I want Broderick to be a little bit better for it to be an A. I'd have to say like A minus or B plus.
Yeah.
That area. I think, man, it's everything else is there. And Broderick, you know, even though he has that Maybe it's just the dialogue. Maybe it's the script. You know, just whenever he's volunteering to you know, storm the fort, and they're like, "Your men haven't rested in 2 days," and he's like, "There's more to winning than rest." And I'm like, "Why are you trying to be so dramatic with that line?"
Yeah,
I think that Matthew
Broderick, and then he's like riding along the beach, and he lets the horse go, and he's just staring at the horse in the sunset. Yeah. And I'm like, stop trying to sell me that you're like this epic, you know, vested actor. I was like, it's coming off very awkward. I don't believe you, Matthew Broderick.
I think that's some valid points as being a product of the time this film was made in 1989. You know, war movies were still very, I don't know, cookie cutters a word. We didn't have Saving Private Ryan or anything like that yet that was ultra violent and showed us the horrors of war. So I think they tried to make this a little more very dramatic, very show the hero side of the war, which is okay. But like you said, some of the way it's delivered, it's very much a product of, I think, being filmed in 1988, I'm guessing, if the film came out in 89. The editing process.
But I don't think you guys are giving it enough credit, though, because this is the first time in any kind of depiction of, like, black volunteers in the right. Civil War ever. You know, this film also is a cultural significance.
Oh, sure.
Portraying that part of our history.
Yeah.
So that's why I gave it an A, personally.
No, that's fair.
There was a massive hike in interest in Civil War history because people didn't know that this happened at this point. And there was a big surge of Civil War interest after this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's a good point to make that there are other factors other than, you know, Matthew Broderick being subpar, you know?
Yeah.
It's more
I think I get
really,
because I think I give it a solid B+ also. But I think Denzel and the regimen actors are really good in the movie. I mean, I knock Matthew Broderick, but I think he did good enough for the movie. I just felt like it was really good, but I felt like it could have been great. You know, if you had a better lead actor and maybe a few story elements that could have been like maybe 15, 20 minutes longer. There was some weird editing in this where it felt like they were getting to the next scene, you know, a little bit quicker. But other than that, though, I think it's still a really good movie. But yeah, overall, though, I still think this is a good movie and one that people should watch. And
this movie got me interested in Civil War history. I became pretty fascinated with the whole history of the Civil War, and it is such an very important part of our country's identity. And the fingerprints of the Civil War are still affecting us to this day, too, you know? And
for sure.
The legacy of it all. And really, if it weren't, this Civil War was linked to the founding of our country as well, you know? So if our founding fathers had really hammered out the issue of slavery back then at the start of the country, we wouldn't even have a Civil War, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, it's just...
Yeah, that's true.
I'm not blaming our founding fathers. And I know at that time, you know, things are the way they were back then. But, you know, it is what it is. So
it's just a what if, yeah.
Yeah, just a what if. So
yeah. That's a good choice. So,
yeah.
So, so if you've never seen Glory, watch Glory. It's an important movie to watch and learn the story of these men and what they went through.
I got it for $3.99 on Amazon Prime for 4K to own.
Yeah. I owned a copy, and so I bought my own copy.
Nice.
For $9. So.
Yeah, it's inexpensive. Yeah. So I think it's worth spending your money on.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. All right. Well, let's... Do we want to get into some news, or do we want to do our weekly top five first?
Let's do our top five.
Yeah.
Our weekly top five. Okay, so our weekly top five this week is we were kind of indecisive, so we kind of like top five movies that you like that are based on true stories or history, I guess is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
So I guess...
It started out as top five movie speeches.
Yeah, then we changed it. Yeah. I guess I'll go first. And at number five, I have Friday Night Lights, which we covered on the show last year.
Nice.
I just think it's a really good story about high school football in Texas based on true events. Go listen to our episode where we talked that movie. That's all I can really say. That's what I had at number five.
My number five is kind of a supplement to Glory. I went with Gettysburg.
Oh, and cool.
It's actually based on a fictional history novel called The Killer Angels. But yeah, Gettysburg also picks from some true events that happened within the battle as well. And
I actually saw that in theaters. With a friend or some that wanted to go, and I was bored with it in theaters.
Yeah.
Because it's really long. But then I rewatched it a few years after that at home, and it's one of those movies much easier to watch at home. It was a long sitting. I guess you got to think, though, back when that came out, that's a long movie to sit in theaters. Now it's a little more common to watch a long movie in theaters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's okay. I mean, considering it was shot for TV, you know? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's my number five. And it's kind of tied with Kingdom of Heaven. It's somewhat based on the true story, you know, but
Speaking of long, a couple weeks ago, Vudu had the Kingdom of Heaven director's cut for $5. I haven't watched it yet, but I did buy it. I bought it based on your recommendation. So eventually I'm going to get around to watching it.
Okay. That's one with Jamie Foxx, right?
No. Kingdom of Heaven is with...
you're thinking of the Kingdom. Orlando That's Bloom. The war movie.
Oh, okay.
Directed by Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Not the Peter Berg film, The Kingdom.
Okay.
So, Matt, what do you have at number five?
I've got Amityville Horror.
Yeah.
I think it was just super interested in the house that had the portal to hell in it and caused its previous owner to kill his whole family. And, you know, all the stories about the house and all the lore behind it is just fascinating to me.
That's the one with Margo Kidder, right?
Margo Kidder. Yep. She has the topless scene in that one.
Yep.
You know, cause it's a horror movie. So why not, you know,
at,
number four.
At number four, I have 42, The Story of Jackie Robinson with Chadwick Boseman. A few years ago, before he became the Black Panther, I've always, as a baseball fan, been fascinated with the story of Jackie Robinson and what he did for the sport. It's a really great baseball film and a great film about Jackie Robinson. It's actually on Netflix if you've never seen 42. I mean, it kind of came under the radar a few years ago, and it's actually a really, really good movie and one of the best versions I've seen of the Jackie Robinson story. And I've watched probably two or three different film versions of this story, but 42 is really good. Highly recommend watching 42 if you've never seen it.
You ever watched Ken Burns Baseball?
Oh, yeah. I've seen it. Yeah.
Okay. That's so, great. I mean, it's a little dry sometimes. You have to be in the mood.
Oh, sure. It. Yeah.
It's
like one of those documentaries where, like, it's a couple episodes are better than other episodes, but yeah.
No,
it's really
good. It's just, to me, admittedly, it's a slow start because it talks about the dead ball era, you know, and like Jonas Wagner and all that. But once it gets to like the era of Babe Ruth and all forward, you know, that's when it gets good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it stays good afterwards, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's a good documentary.
Second or third ending all the way through. Yeah.
Yeah. Your number four,
My number four is Tora, 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 and Midway. I don't know why. I've always been fascinated with the Pacific War and World War II, the Pacific Theater. Tora, Tora, Tora is really interesting because it was made a co-production between Hollywood and the Japanese film industry. And the Japanese side of the film filmed all of the, you know, what the Japanese were doing. And mm-hmm. of course, the Hollywood side did the, you know, U.S. version. And what's really cool is that this movie is very, very accurate to what was happening. So, and it's then a good Midway, movie. Yeah, Midway starring Charlton Heston. That's a good movie too. You know, it's about the Battle of Midway, the turning point of the Pacific Theater. But yeah, I highly recommend those.
Long one day when COVID is a little less, you need to drive out to Fredericksburg, Texas, and go to the Admiral Nimitz Pacific War Museum. Man, it's one of the best museums I've ever been in. You will absolutely love it, man. It's amazing, amazing museum.
Yeah.
It's all about the Pacific War. It's really, really great.
Yeah. Speak old German, too.
But no, that if you go to Fredericksburg, though, that museum is just incredible. Like, every time I go to Fredericksburg, I want to go to the museum, and it's just a really, really great museum.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also picked a baseball movie for number four, but I went with Moneyball.
Moneyball, that's a good one.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
I like everything about that film except for, and no disrespect to Philip Seymour Hoffman because he's really good, but he's not Art Howe. That's probably my only thing with that. Even Art Howe has complained about that. He's like, yeah, I wish they would pick somebody else to play me. But you know, it's a good movie.
Art Howe.
A very young Chris Pratt in the film before he was a star. So yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. What's your number three?
Number three, I had JFK. And I know it fabricates events, but goddamn if that's one watchable movie. Great performances throughout the film. It really makes you think about like who killed JFK. You know, a lot of people wondered when Oliver Stone made that film, people wondered, did he have friends in the FBI that were giving him information? I mean, that's how intense that film is. I mean, JFK is quite a film to watch. It'll really question your beliefs and what may have happened to John F. Kennedy after you watch that film. And I'm not the biggest Oliver Stone fan in the world, but that's a really, really great movie. And it is based on true events to a certain extent. You know, obviously, there's a lot of theorizing in that film. But the thing is, the great thing about Oliver Stone's JFK is they still, at the end of the movie, point the blame on Oswald, but they throw the ideas out there that more things could have happened. And that's what's cool about the film. But a really, really good movie.
In that movie. Wasn't John Candy in that movie?
It's a hell of a cast in that movie. Candy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That movie has an incredible cast.
Yeah. That's one of those movies I've never watched, but I've been meaning to one.
It's definitely worth watching.
My number three is Run Silent, Run Deep, a submarine movie. It's not really based on the true story. Yeah, it still holds up, in my opinion. It stars Burt Lancaster and Clark Gable, and it's almost like a Moby Dick type story where the obsessive submarine commander wants to go after this Japanese destroyer commander. He's been hunting him. And it's a really cool movie. It also stars Don Rickles in it, too.
Oh, Don Rickles. Nice.
Yeah. And maybe Ernest Borgnine. I'm not quite sure. But anyways, it's also it's based on the true accounts of a submarine commander. But the main plot point of the movie, I don't think is real. But other than that, I highly recommend Run Silent, Run Deep. It's on Amazon Prime. But I think you have to purchase it. I'm not quite sure. But it's a very old movie, so you may have to. That's my number three. Okay. Run Silent, Run Deep.
I went with Remember the Titans for number three. I think it's just such a feel-good movie.
It's one of my favorite football movies.
Yeah. It's got everything. I mean, and we used to watch it for our church retreats. Whenever, you know, I'm Catholic and, you know, we're going into confirmation, we tied it into, you know, the fruits of the Holy Spirit and stuff like that. So there's a lot of, you know, lessons in life that you can learn from that film just about, coming together in like a retreat style, like their football camp, and then going out into the real world and keeping those ties that you develop with people. And then once you get out in the real world, there are different obstacles that you face, obviously.
It is a really good movie, but talk about an overdramatic movie. We said Glory is overdramatic. Yeah. River of Tides is really overdramatic.
It is overdramatic.
Yeah. At number two, I have Catch Me If You Can. A really underrated Spielberg film, which is just really well done. You know, and I was watching it a few weeks ago. It was on TV, and I was coming across it. I was in the middle of the film, but the movie just catches you right away. You know, it's a movie that Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hanks did together. I don't think it's talked enough about. You know, people kind of forget about it for some reason. But like I was watching on TV the other day, I'm like, wow, this is so good. And you know, and I remember seeing it in theaters and really liking the movie a lot too. And there's a million choices I could have picked for this top five, but you know. That's one that just stood out to me lately.
It has the best knock knock joke ever in the film. I always remember Tom Hanks. They're like, "You never laugh. You never tell jokes." He's like, "I got a joke. Knock knock." And they're like, all excited. "Who's there?" "Go fuck yourselves."
Very funny.
Yeah.
No.
God, Long is so fucking stone cold.
What's your number two? Long. Is what my mind? You didn't do your. Oh, okay.
That's number two, man.
Number two is Lincoln.
Good.
I was just watching it right before we logged in because freaking Glory got me in the mood to watch Lincoln, and man, Daniel Day-Lewis, he basically rewrote. You know, the whole how to act as Lincoln playbook. You know, I go on YouTube and I see people portraying Lincoln as like, man, that's nothing compared to how realistic and humanized Lincoln was in Spielberg's movie. And everyone else is like, other portrayals of Lincoln is very mythologized and very bigger than life and booming low voice, you know, but no, I mean, Daniel Day-Lewis's portrayal of Lincoln is like top notch.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
Well,
I feel sorry for any actor who tackles that character, you know, this movie.
And you guys know one of my favorite movies is The Last Mohicans. And, but I didn't put it on the list though, because it's like, there's no proof that any of that was based on true stories. You know, there's frontier stories and things like that, but the movie doesn't even claim to be based on true events, but there were stories about a guy named Hawkeye that really lived with the Indians and stuff, but who knows if it was ever, you know, really confirmed. So that's why I didn't put it on my list.
Yeah.
Matt, you're number two.
I also put Catch Me If You Can as number two.
See?
I was debating on putting it number one, but, you know, I didn't think I could justify it as number one, but I feel like it's definitely... floating around in some top fives somewhere, and if someone had to make this list.
Very good film, and extremely accurate, too, as to what happened with that guy. Yeah. My number one, I went with a safe pick, one of my favorite all-time films, and that's Braveheart, you know, which I know they took a lot of liberties with the story of William Wallace. You know, he never slept with a princess. You know, he never did any of that, but it's still such a great movie. I love Braveheart. It's one of my favorite movies based on a true story. You know,
did you ever see that Netflix movie, The Outlaw King?
The what?
I never went back and watched it. It was one of those things where I started it one day and I think I got distracted. And
okay.
I heard it's pretty okay. Yeah, because it's like the story.
Pretty okay.
It was the story of Robert the Bruce, I think, after Braveheart, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And supposedly some more accurate portrayal of the whole era, you know. So
yeah,
my number one is
great.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, my number one is Master and Commander, Far Side of the World, starring Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany. It is not really based on any kind of true story, but it is. Based on the era of the Napoleonic War, and it is such an immersive movie, you know, that you don't really care if it was really based on anything for real. But they, it just makes you feel like you're actually on the sail, the age of sail, you know? And, that's my number one history-ish, movie pick. Yeah, I always go back to it once a year. So how about you, Matt? What's your number one?
I picked I don't think it's the best, historically accurate, or not historically accurate, but movie based on historical event movie ever. But it was the first one I ever saw.
Personal favorite.
In a classroom, and that was The Alamo. It was my
with
John Wayne. That was my favorite one for a long time because I just thought he was so cool as Davy Crockett.
That's a good movie, though. I mean,
yeah.
It's a good pick.
It's Texas.
Yeah, I remember watching the Disney version of Davy Crockett.
Yeah.
I was like,
those were on Disney Plus.
Davy Crockett, King of the Wild Frontier.
Yeah.
You know, we talk movies based on real events. I mean, there's stuff on here. You know, we didn't even talk like American Sniper as a recent movie, Black Hawk Down, some of the recent war movies, because, you know, nowadays with everything being filmed and being brought in the news, some of these modern war films are very accurate as far as their depictions of things. Lone Survivor, Patriots Day, which is, of course, came out with Mark Wahlberg talking about the Boston bombing. So modern films are a little more history, you know, are a little different because things are so fed to us now that they're able to make films on current events. And,
Have you seen Zero Dark Thirty?
Yeah, I saw
Zero Dark Thirty. That's really good.
That movie.
It's a good movie. Zero Dark Thirty. You know, then there's older historical movie. Ben Hur. It's based on historical events. Yeah, it's an older film.
Ben Hur.
You know, so I mean, there's so much. You know, it's a Gladiator. Anytime we do these lists. Yeah, Gladiator's based on true times, but not true story. You know, so like
Shakespeare in love.
I was reading about Gladiator. They really took a lot of liberties with Commodus. He wasn't quite the way they made. He was probably more evil than the way they made him in the movie.
And one thing that he did like to do is injure whoever he was going to fight in the Gladiator games. Right before he had to fight them, they would have like broken ribs or. Their sword wouldn't be that sharp, or their shields were sucky, and he would have an easy time defeating him. And he wasn't killed by another gladiator; he was killed by being strangled in a bathtub by his trainer.
We just all did top fives, and like none of us even had Apollo 13 on there. That could have easily been on all of our lists. That's such a great movie too.
Could have been 42.
Yeah. 42, 61. I don't know, maybe not 61.
What, the HBO? The Roger Maris? That's a good movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Even though the Mickey Mantle family.
1942.
No, I know. He said 1942.
The Spielberg comedy. The only one in one of the few Spielberg comedies based on a true story.
61 was good. The Mickey Mantle family just didn't like 61. Yeah. Even though Billy Crystal was friends with the Mickey Mantle family, they still weren't happy that they put Mickey Mantle's opiate use in the film. But it's like Billy Crystal said, "Hey, the guy did a lot of opiates. I'm not going to leave it out of the movie." You know.
My Uncle Ted met him. He stood in line in the rain to get his signature on a baseball, and he was looking rough. Because he had didn't he have VD too?
Ted had to be how?
A lot.
Isn't Ted my age?
Oh, he was little.
So
dad took him.
He had to be 7 or 8 years old because Mantle died in like 89. So all right, well let's do some news.
He tried to sell that baseball for $5,000, and the guy was like, "Man, you act like you met him." And he's like, "I did meet him." And then he's like, "Oh." Like, yeah, bitch.
Well, let's see. Let's get into some news. You know, we've got all these director's cuts coming out and stuff. And did you guys know that there's a longer cut of Batman Forever out there? I had heard this years ago. And now that it was a rumor for the longest time. Joel Schumacher never wanted to talk about it. But it does exist. And apparently, now that Schumacher has died, there's been some talks resurfacing about they should put this out on HBO Max. Apparently it's finished. It's not one of those director's cuts where they'd have to go spend a lot of money on it, maybe clean up the film at the most. It's about 170 minutes long. It's darker. They said it's much more in tone with the Burton films. But the studio didn't really like Schumacher liked it, but the studio didn't really care for it. So they cut a lot of the darker stuff out and made the Batman Forever version we got because Warner Brothers felt like, hey, we have Jim Carrey. Let's sell this movie with Jim Carrey. So there's actually some movement about this on the internet that tried to get Warner Brothers to release the film as a respect to Joel Schumacher and put out the director's cut that was never seen. I'd be curious to watch it. You know, I'd for sure, you know.
I'd watch it. Yeah. And man, that was like, you remember SeaWorld? Man, they used to do a water show with that scene where Batman's in the bat boat, you know, or whatever.
But not only that, though, you know, as much as we love Michael Keaton's Batman, people forget Batman Forever was the most profitable film out of those four movies. And it made the most money. So, you know, if it made the most money, then, you know, if you're Warner Brothers and you're sitting on this director's cut, you know, put it out. What good's it doing sitting in the vault? You know, we never thought we were going to get the Richard Donner cut of Superman 2. We finally got it. So maybe we'll get the Schumacher cut, which for some reason it's nicknamed the Red Diary cut. I don't know why it's called that, but we'll see. So I'd watch it. So,
yeah.
So Seth Rogen.
Yeah, I definitely watch it.
Yeah. Seth Rogen is going to produce a new Ninja Turtles movie. And they're going to go back to CGI animation. You know, I think this is probably the best way to reboot the Turtles is just stick with what works. You know, the live action movies have not done as well as, you know, they would like them to. Even though we just covered the original 1990 Ninja Turtles film, that one's fun. But, you know, I think animation's a good way to go with the Ninja Turtles. I think it works best. And Seth Rogen.
That's fair. For sure.
Seth Rogen, you know, people kind of laugh at him being a pothead and stuff, but, you know, when he gets his hands on stuff, he takes his geek culture seriously. So if there's one guy that could do it, you know, maybe it's him.
Only if he puts Vanilla Ice and the Ninja Rat back in.
Fallout is going to become an Amazon television series from the producers of Westworld. This is very kind of cool, man. There seems to be a lot of interest behind this when Amazon announced yesterday it was at it's in development. The Fallout games are extremely popular, going back to PC gamers years ago before they came out on the consoles. The world of Fallout definitely lends itself to a television show, I believe. I played some of New Vegas, and I actually have Fallout 4 on my PS4, but I haven't played it that much. It's kind of a cool idea. You know, I think the Fallout world is definitely ripe for television.
Yeah.
Either y'all ever play any Fallout games?
Dude, Fallout 3 and Fallout New Vegas are one of my all-time favorite games to play.
Yeah, New Vegas is really good.
Fallout 4 was really good, too. Yeah, Fallout 4 was really good, but I don't know. I didn't really like the story that much. Uh-huh. But Fallout New Vegas had a really good story, and it has a very good tongue-in-cheek humor as well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and Fallout 3, I played that one quite a bit.
I always like the
Washington, D.C.
I like the world of Fallout. The idea of it's kind of a mix of post-apocalyptic, steampunk, and science fiction, all kind of in one. So it's a mix of genres, which comes across really cool. You know, so it could be a lot of fun for a TV series. And if Amazon's doing it, chances are it's probably going to happen. So Marvel has rebought the rights to. Or they purchased the rights from Aliens and Predator from Dark Horse Comics. This is significant because when Dark Horse Comics got the rights to Predator and Alien back in the late 80s, that was a big deal, you know, in the comic world for licensed characters to be bought, especially R-rated licensed characters, and to make violent comics like that. Not so uncommon anymore, but it's a big deal for Dark Horse to have had that license for almost 35 years, and now Marvel, through their rights through 20th Century Fox, has chosen to take the rights of the comics back. So hopefully Marvel doesn't fuck it up and they do some cool stuff with aliens, and maybe we'll finally get a Wolverine versus Aliens comic book or something. You know, but I remember being a young comic reader being a young comic reader, reading some of those early Aliens and Predator books from Dark Horse, and they were really cool because it was like, wow, these are rated R cool comics, and I get to read them. And so that's a significant...
Did you ever get to read Batman versus Predator?
Yeah, I did. That was cool, too.
That's okay. Yeah. That was a really cool comic.
Yeah, that was a good book. Yeah, Dark Horse used to cross over a lot with DC. You know, they would allow DC to use Aliens or Predator characters, but Marvel never, they never did it with the Marvel. So now that Marvel owns it, here's their chance to get some of those characters. So so we'll see. So, but that's pretty significant comic book news, I think, in the comic book world today. That's all I have for news, unless you guys had anything.
No, I have I have something. It's something that we do more of in our Patreon. But 29 years ago today, Terminator 2 was released in theaters.
Oh, that's cool.
News. The best movie ever made. That's right. I said
best,
it.
Best action movie for me.
Best action
movie. I don't know if it's the best movie ever made, but you know, I don't know. I don't know if I'd even say it's the best action movie ever made.
I prefer it over Citizen Kane.
Boom.
Citizen Kane's out of action.
I tried watching that movie once. That's a boring movie. I can understand his technical achievements as far as camera work, but boring ass movie. So
I've never seen it. So I've never seen Casablanca either, and it's all. And Casablanca is only like an hour and 25 minutes long, and I've still never watched it.
So I really like that movie.
Yeah,
actually. I think. HBO Max has the Kane Mutiny on there.
Well, Matt got HBO Max, and I'm mooching off of him. So, I browsed through it. I was seeing what they had on there. I really like the Studio Ghibli stuff on there. That's pretty cool. A lot of classic films, you know, and they're part. Oh, all the Superman films went on there today, actually. So they put those on there finally.
Oh, nice.
So yeah.
Nice.
Harley Quinn season 1. The Harley Quinn cartoon's supposed to be on there in August, I believe. They're going to put season 1 and 2 on there. Pretty cool stuff. All right. Well, before we get out of here, let's preview next week's film as a movie that is celebrating its 25th anniversary, and that is the animated version, not the ScoJo version. not that that's a terrible film. But we're going to talk the anime classic Ghost in the Shell.
What's a simulated experience again?
All your memories about your wife and daughter are false. They're like a dream. Someone's taken advantage of you. They were trying to make you ghost hack into some government officials. Do you understand what I'm saying?
But that can't be. I had a picture of her. She was there.
The truth is, you've never had a wife or kid. Like he said, they aren't real. They're a simulated experience, a fantasy.
Are we talking about the Puppet Master? The infamous mystery hacker?
We don't know a lot either. No clue about age, sex, or background. All we know for certain is this person is on the international most wanted list for crimes including stock manipulation, illegal information gathering, political engineering, several acts of terrorism. The nickname Puppet Master comes from the ghost hacking.
My code name is Project 2501. I am a living, thinking entity who was created in the sea of information.
That's all it is. Information, even a simulated experience or a dream, is simultaneous reality and fantasy.
The net is vast and infinite.
Ghost in the Shell. On Blu-ray and DVD.
Yay. Long, I know you're going to miss next week. You're going to be out of town. But so we're going to talk Ghost in the Shell next week. A film that, along with Akira, was a lot of people's first foray in animation or into Japanimation, as they used to call it before they came up with the term anime.
Mm-hmm.
and in another important film to get it animated to the mass markets in the U.S. It did have a theatrical release, and it's still widely available today. It's on Amazon Prime. It's on Vudu. So you can easily watch this and watch along with us for next week. A movie that I actually really like a lot. I think Ghost in the Shell is a really excellent film. So it should be fun to talk about on next week's show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how?
Definitely one of my favorites when I started. I was an anime fan too.
Mm-hmm.
Ghost in the Shell.
Yep.
I haven't watched it in 20 years.
Yeah.
But,
yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's some interesting versions, which we'll talk about next week. Like, if you go on like Amazon Prime, there's like Ghost in the Shell 2.0, where like for one of the anniversaries, they went in, they CGI'd some of the scenes. And so it's kind of weird, you know, but then not all the scenes are like that. I'd recommend just watching the original version though, you know, because I tried watching the version with the CGI stuff and it's a little distracting. So, yeah, so that's next week's show. But as always, you know, thank everybody for listening and going to the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your needs and, click our Patreon button if you want. For just $2 a month, you can join our Patreon. The July movie is going to be Superman 4, The Quest for Peace. That's going to be quite a lot of fun to tear apart because it's fucking horrible. So for just $2 a month, though, you can get that episode here in July when it comes out. And we just did Red Sonja for June, and that was a lot of fun tearing that piece of shit movie apart, too. And very hard to watch, too. But
yes,
so
very hard to watch.
But yeah, so go to the RebelRadioPodcast.com for those needs. And as always, thank you for listening. We hope you're staying safe out there. And until next time, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the Union General.
No. And until next time, just go there and do it.
Go there and do it.
Do it.
This is Booker T, Hall of Famer, and you're listening to Rubber Radio. Now, can you dig that, sucker?